Okay, hello, hello. We are back with the Coach's Coach podcast, and I am joined by a special guest. Johnny, introduce yourself.
Thank you, Angelo. My name is Johnny Cardello. I'm currently a coach at Portland City United Soccer Club. I coach the 2008 girls age group and I coach the 2012 girls age group. So I'm very, very excited to be here, Angelo. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Is it your 2008 girls who kind of like have won everything recently?
Yes, that is them. We recently won at Crossfire Challenge. We won the Oregon State Cup for U13, even though now they're U14. And then we made it to quarterfinals of the Far West Regionals this past year. It was quite an exciting year, especially with COVID, being such a massive challenge, right, in 2020. So super, super fun group to have. Also, one of the other teams won the Oregon Founders Cup as well within the age group. So it was a great year for us.
I have obviously had the opportunity of kind of playing against your group with one of my groups, and they are a super talented group, very, very well coached. So a lot of credit goes to you for that.
Thanks.
I think with that being said, what I'd like to do is use this opportunity to talk about developing a winning mentality within a group. So, question for you:
Sure.
have you done it?
You mentioned the topic of the night, right? And it got me to thinking, and it goes all the way back to when I took this group over. So, like a little bit of history with the group. I took them over August of their U10 year. So they were playing 7v7. Okay. I didn't get them in the in May, which would have been like the traditional coaching cycle, right? The previous coach, he works at the club and he's one of the, chief officers at the club. So he's like, "Hey, I need you to take over. I got to handle a lot of stuff." And I'm like, "Oh, sure, great." And I was lucky enough to know one of the players because I've coached her older brother. So there was like an instant relationship. And I think that was a great thing to like open up to the rest of the team, right? And for me, it was building trust. Like that's what I kept coming back to today was like building trust with the players, especially with coaching young girls. I think as a male coach, you could either break them pretty easy or you can make them into strong, young, talented players. And talent doesn't mean just necessarily with the ball, right? But just confidence in themselves. And so I really worked on having them build and like I wanted to earn their trust, right? And once I earned their trust, I knew I could push them. And even when they were 9, 10 years old, I remember losing this game. And I wasn't upset that we'd lost the game by any means. They're right, they're 9 years old. But I was upset that they didn't try. Like I felt like they were walking on the field. And this team we were playing was very good. They were much better than us at the time, right? But I was upset that we didn't have that kind of like fight in us. To just go out and do our best. And so the next training session, I ran them, and I was like, it's not okay to just give up on a soccer field. Never give up. And that was like the foundation, of like instilling that desire to like push themselves to the next level mentally, physically, right? And always explaining to them that it's always okay to lose a match as long as you put forth your maximum effort. That you show that you care, that you're trying to win, right? And I think once that was built, still taking those losses and watching them just work, and realizing that they wanted to win. It wasn't about me as a coach, right? that it was on them and their decision, that they had the power to choose to win or lose. And then I think the next level is instilling in self-belief, right?
Yeah. I think it's a really important point that you make there. I always, whenever I talk to coaches, and you can sometimes tell that there is this burning from within them to win the game. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Dependent on the level, you know, that you're working at, you obviously want to win games, but I try to say to coaches, what's more important is that your players want to win the game.
Right.
And understanding that there is no player in the world that leaves home saying, you know what, I think I'd like to lose this game today.
Right.
You know, they want to win. So as coaches, our job is to get out of our own way in terms of being prepared to do whatever it takes to win. And it's to show the kids we work with a process by which, when they perfect it, can lead to wins.
Yes, absolutely.
You know? And so it's a really important point that you make. Of course, we want to win, but right, we can't want to win to our detriment and to the detriment of the players that we work with.
Yeah. We as coaches can't want to win more than the players.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's what leads to, and I've seen it way too many times, you know, the team loses a game and the coach is screaming at them on the sideline. You know, the kids came out to win that game today, but if they lost the game and an ice cream van pulled up, as soon as they'd lost it, they'll all run over, they'll all want to get ice cream.
Right.
You know, they're back to their normal way. You know, you can't then dwell on it. And you know, I'm as competitive as anybody else. I can still now remember big sort of pieces of my life where I've been involved in a game where we lost it. And I can remember the role I played in us losing the game. So I had a chance to score and I didn't take it. You know, I can remember the feeling. I can remember the incident, who gave me the ball. You know, I can remember it all. And so, you know, these are things that kind of live with you when you are competitive. There's no getting away from it. But you can't then kind of have that sort of transferred onto the players and almost be trying to live vicariously through the players.
Right.
You know, you've got to remove yourself from that situation, recognize what your role in the game, in the whole sort of process is, and then work from it from there. So yeah, I kind of fully agree with you there. I think attitude that you mentioned earlier is also another really important thing. This idea of turning it on, turning it off. You know, we should be trying to practice how we play.
Right.
And I think one of the key things about winning or winning teams is that they have such high demands within training that you constantly see the improvement because they are constantly raising their own bar.
Right.
You know, we're in kind of sport, we talk about adaptation, how we adapt. And it's only when you're forced into a situation that's uncomfortable that adaptation can occur.
Right.
So if you look at it in the sense of developing muscles, you have to destroy the muscle, which means going through pain,
right, yourself,
before the muscle repairs itself stronger. You know, sprinting, if you continuously work on plyometric work, explosive work, you know, explosive sprinting, eventually, as you're pushing yourself, you will then achieve that goal that you set. Now you set another goal, push yourself to achieve that next goal. And it's the same in training. In training, you've got to be firing that ball into your teammate so that you develop their first touch. You get used to moving the ball at such a pace and such, you know, such a weight that it's hard to intercept, but your teammates are improving. You know, and at the beginning, it might look awful, but you've got to push through it. Train as you want to play.
Absolutely. I think the training environment's a huge part of it, right? And I kind of want to step back here and talk about like that self-belief, right?
Sure.
As a player, especially, I transitioned from coaching boys to girls, and now I coach girls full time. And for me, I like boys right out of the gate, they have this confidence, this belief in themselves, you know? And then on the girl side, it was like they were shy or holding back or reserved. And it was such a like an interesting dynamic change for me. And I realized that on the girl side, especially like when I was in this moment of this serious development phase with the 08s, was that they needed to believe in themselves before I believed in them, before their parents, etc. Now, of course, their parents did, and of course, I did, and I tried to continually reinforce it. But things didn't change in the development scheme until they started to believe that they were a good player. And so it's a lot of mental, I guess, like a lot of like mental caressing, you know, like you're always giving them just like little bits of information. Good job. Great, that's perfect. You know, keep going. Let's get a little bit more next time. And then they just start to realize that they're doing it. And then they're like, I can do this, right? And so once you have the trust and they start to believe in themselves, their development, their technical development, their tactical development, their desire to win, right? Getting back to that environment, like the culture of the team is to win. And it just all chain effects. And then the other side of it was the team environment, the team culture. It was very important for these girls to realize that, like, you don't have to be best friends with every player on your team, but you have to respect everybody on your team.
Yeah, it's a
And then
huge
you,
part of it.
right, like, it, and then you started to notice the care and like the genuine human side of them towards each other. And it was really like a beautiful, beautiful thing to like watch them grow into, you know, intelligent human beings, you know, and seeing them on the field, like if a player got hurt, you know, they'd all be like, is she okay? You know, how can I help her? Like they were, you know, if somebody had a huge mistake, they would all like look at each other and be like, it's fine. We have your back. We'll make up for it. And that bleeds into that desire as a unit to go back and make up for mistakes and go win a match. So
Yeah, for
it.
sure. I think I'm going to go into kind of talking about kind of characteristics of team championship winning teams. And so, you know, we'll definitely touch on that. I think another important thing that you mentioned, and just for coaches out there who are making the transition between girls teams, boys teams, etc., it's actually you're 100% spot on. It's, you know, it's a huge change between working with the two kind of genders. And obviously these are generalizations made because you have exceptions in both groups.
Absolutely.
The thing that I find fascinating about boys is that boys tend to work on a like a hierarchical structure. So the best player tends to be the most popular. It's
I like that.
generally how it works. You know, it's like your stereotypical alpha male stuff.
Right.
No, listen, I'm the fastest. I'm the one that scores all the goals. I'm going to be the top boy. And then people start to kind of boys with boys. They're looking to find their way in that pecking order, which is where all of that confidence and bravado comes from. It's peacock, you know, peacock stuff. I'm going to show my feathers and, you know, I'm going to figure out where I go. With girls, your ability and your social status are separate. And so you can be one of the best players in the team, but that doesn't necessarily make you one of the most popular players. And sometimes to earn a place within that popular group, you sometimes have to tone down your sporting achievement because if the most popular isn't a high achiever in terms of sporting ability, they may then look to kind of alienate that person who they may see as a threat because of their ability. It's something I've dealt with many, 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 many times in, you know, a good 15 years or so of working with girls in football, soccer. And there's a thing called relational aggression, which is pretty much, you know, somebody who can't elevate social status because of playing ability. But what they want to do is maintain their status as somebody who's popular. And so anybody that has ability is a threat. And what they'll try to do is neutralize that threat through things like bullying.
Right.
You know, that kind of, oh, don't talk to that person. Or, you know, oh, I can't believe, did you hear this? And, you know, rumors and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen often, but I think it's something that girls are very aware of, which is why you don't get the peacocking, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
Every now and again, of course, you'll get, you know, a girl that is supremely confident, doesn't care about the social stuff, will come and just show what she's got. You know,
right.
But just as generalizations, you know, the difference between the two groups is really interesting. And then, you know, from that, how you communicate as a coach with players, you know, like you were saying earlier, giving feedback. With the boys, you don't really need to be as detailed.
Right.
You know, you can say to a boy, hey, you did a great job, and they're great with that.
That's it.
But with a girl, it's, you know, I really like the way you waited for that player to do this, and then you executed that, you know, perfect timing. It was really good job. Well done. And they want that extra bit. It's very, very interesting, the difference.
It's a big difference and a great point. Like how you provide or how much info you provide to, you know, the girls versus the boys. And it goes a long way too. Like, how it affects them in such a positive way if you give them the correct information on the girl side. And just like you said, the boys, it's just, hey, that was fantastic, and they're good for the day.
Yeah. You know, I think as a coach, it's always good to get into the good habits. So with the boys, you should also explain to them exactly what it was that they did, because you want your communication, especially corrective communication, to be specific. You know, that's what's going to help the players improve to the maximum potential.
Right.
But as we're saying with the boys, if you are not so specific, you know, it really doesn't matter. They're just going to take the praise and they'll run with it. You know.
Right.
Have you heard of a study done by Carol Dweck? Just while we're talking about feedback.
No, I'm unfamiliar with who that is.
So I think I've spoken about this on the podcast before. She did a study where she had basically two groups. The two groups were given the same kind of exercises to do. And one group was praised based on their ability. And the other group was praised on their hard work. And what they found was whenever a group was praised for ability, they kind of hit a wall much earlier. So when they were told, oh, you know, you're so great at this, this just comes so natural to you, you know, you're born to do this. When they got to a level where the task was much more challenging, the idea that they were a natural soon dissipated and they were stuck. Then it was doubt. Oh, maybe I'm not a natural. If I can't do this, maybe I'm not a natural. The group that were praised based on hard work found when they got to that level where it became challenging, because they'd been praised for their hard work, they worked harder. And so they were actually able to achieve more. They were able to push and continue trying to solve problems for longer. They were more likely to come up with different methods to solve problems.
Their foundation was built on hard work.
So, you know, I think whenever we do offer praise, it's really important to kind of make sure that we're praising based on, you know, work ethic and that kind of thing, you know, the things that they can control, you know, how smart you are, how talented you are when you're born is a whole different kind of discussion, but it's not something you can control.
Yeah, absolutely. Your desire, you can control, like your passion, right?
Right.
If you love something, you should chase it endlessly. And
yeah, absolutely. Put the work in, keep striving, keep persevering. You know, these are all things that you can control. So yeah, it's another great point, I have to say. With your teams, do you play? Sorry, do you put a focus on winning games?
Not early on, right? So let's take a look at the, you know, how I viewed the 08s when they were U10, and how I'm currently viewing the 2012s because they're U10, right? Right now, it's about hard work. And it's about developing good decisions and enjoyment and fun and love, right? Because in the long run, if they practice good things early on and have a good attitude and a good work rate, it's all going to come out later on for when they're teenagers or getting ready for college. And to me, that's what matters most. Like, hey, do you love soccer? Do you want to use it as a tool to get into college, right? I mean, sure, would I love to look back 10 years from now and be like, wow, that was one of my players and she's on the Thorns? That would be amazing.
Absolutely.
But what's the percentage of that? Less than nil, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. so thin. So it's about their education and, you know, that's the long-term goal, right? So I don't look at it as winning and focusing on early on. As the team shows their characteristics and like what they're capable of, what their own desires are, then we start dialing into like the winning side of it, right? Mm-hmm. So at one point during the, I guess it was U11 year, the 08s were like, we want to win State Cup. I asked them, I was like, do you want to, or do you want to get, you know, just focus on continuing getting better? Like, how do we blend this? And they're like, we want to win State Cup. And we pushed them, you know, mentally, physically, technically, we pushed them. And we didn't get out of group that year. It was, you know, we lost, I guess, by goal differential to be in the top two spots, okay? And then their U12 year, COVID hit right at the end of their season, so we didn't have a State Cup. But that was something they still desired. Mm-hmm. And so it was in their hands. And we talked about results, and it was important because results equaled confidence as a unit. Right. You know, even if it was tight games, it wasn't always about the win, but did we lose, and did we lose in a way where we felt we were the better team? Because it's football, right? I mean, you could dominate 90% of the match and lose 1-0, right? So we focused on that as well versus the win or the loss. And going into their U13 year, I mean, it was a huge transition year, right? Coming out of COVID, being allowed to play, and then our transition to 11v11. Mm-hmm. You know, playing full-sided ball was, you know, an adjustment, but I was, like, impressed of how intelligent they were. And all they wanted to do that summer was just play, because it was their, like, they finally got out of the house. Like, yeah. They were like, they were attached to it. And you know, we didn't know what to expect when that season hit, right? So, but they were like, we want to win. Like, we want to be the best team in the state. And, you know, I let them lead it. And did I push them? Probably outside of their realm. Yeah, I'd have to say I did, you know. And I mean, you know, looking back at like playing you guys, I mean, you guys were 3 years older, you know, and that's a big jump, but they wanted it. You know, and I wanted to see if they could handle it, you know. And then we were willing to play the 06 girls at PCU, right? We were willing to play anyone, just they wanted to play and keep pushing themselves. But the results also in some way mattered for us, because the girls wanted to experience something outside of Oregon. And the way to do that was to be in the top three of league. So we qualified for the Northwest Conference League. And after we got through our season, we went through the season. I think we had six games through the season. We won five and tied one. And they realized, we really have a legitimate shot of winning State Cup this year. And they were burning for it. They were willing to do anything for it. They were training, privately. They were training extra days. So at that point, we were results oriented, right? Because you need to have good results in order to win a cup, right? Mm-hmm. And as we went through the cup, we get to our last group game. And the game happened on Saturday. Yeah, it was the last group game was on a Saturday, and our semifinal was on Sunday. It was back to back. It was really weird schedule. And so Greg and I, who's my assistant, he's more of a head coach in his own right, we looked at this game and we were playing United, who legitimately was the other contender, mm-hmm. right? And Greg and I knew we didn't care about the game because both United and us had qualified through. We were already through, right? And we knew United was good. We knew that they wanted to beat us because we beat them during season. But Greg and I weren't willing to sacrifice the girls physically during the game because we had the semifinal less than 24 hours later.
Right.
But we didn't tell the girls that because the girls, it was important to win. They wanted to win. And we go out and we played and United was fired up and they were really, really good. And we were really off that day. And one of my defenders clears the ball. And it hits a United player in the knee and rockets into the upper 90 of our own goal. I looked at Greg and I was like, it's going to be one of those nights. We were cool with it, We were trying to see how the girls were responding and they started to respond a little bit better. And then United scored another just beautiful goal. This one was so clean. And I'm like, okay. And then now Greg and I are pulling players. We're managing time.
Mm-hmm.
We're managing positions. We're changing players who are not natural in their positions. And then second half comes around and we score an own goal. It was such a wild deflection. It hit off my player's shoulder blade and shot into the goal. So mm-hmm. It was 3-0. And then they scored a clean goal again. And it was 4-0 at the end of the match. In all essence, I'm glad we lost that match because we needed to, all season long, we didn't give up a goal. Not through season, not through the beginning stages of State Cup. That was the first goal/goals we let in. And it was good for them because they needed to know that they can overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hit the semifinals and the next day, and the girls were mad,
yeah,
motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Fired up like I've never seen him before. And we played West Side. And, I was I watched the first, it was 15 seconds in Angelo, and we put together eight kind of combinations. We still have the ball. We're breaking down the right wing and we finished a ball and it was 45 seconds into the semifinal State Cup and we're winning 1-0, And you can tell that loss ignited something. It was a pressure release for us. And just kind of sent the steam rolling, right? So I think the long term of it is results are important, but also managing the team psychologically, physically is very, very important too. You can't put every weight on a win or a loss.
Right.
This past weekend, actually kind of push on that topic a little bit. We played United in our second game of league. They picked up some new players. We picked up new players and it was a beautiful game. And we go down 2-0, right? They scored 5 minutes in after we had control of the ball for most of that period and they scored a beautiful goal, lower corner. And we responded and we were attacking. You could see that fire again coming from the girls, but we couldn't finish in the moments, Their keeper did a good job. Their defenders did a good job. We created a ton of chances. Second half comes around. there was like this fluke goal that happened. So we're down 2-0. And Greg and I are like talking, like, I'm really proud. We're proud of these girls because like Angel, the soccer that they were playing was magical. And we were dominant. You know, we just weren't finishing in the moments, right? Yeah. And I wasn't like upset. I like the girls were like, I want to win. And I'm like, listen, it's not always about winning. I always told you, if you work really hard and you play good football, I'll never be upset. Mm-hmm. And they're like, but we want to win. Mm-hmm. And this girl, Ruby, she looks at me and she's like, I pulled her off. She normally plays the 11, right? The left wing. And I pulled her off, just give her some rest, you know? And she looks at me and she like stone cold face, Angelo. And she's like, put me in. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. Okay. Like there was something there. You know what I mean? And so I was like, well, I need to put you in a left back. She's like, I don't care where I play. I need to be in right now. And she attacked like 6-7 times in the last 10 minutes, drew a PK. We score. And then she drives up again, creates opportunities. We start just shelling and we get a couple corners and we score like in the last 2 minutes of the game to tie it 2-2. Mm-hmm. And looking back at this, I was like, this is amazing. Because it's on, that was on the team, not on myself or Greg,
right,
pushing for that result, you know?
So. Yeah. It's really kind of interesting when you can get a team to a point where the self-motivation is there. It makes the job so much easier. It really does. I also think that this is why I set in-game targets. So, for example, I have 3 targets for the game. They're process targets because, like you say, you can play the best game in the world and you can still lose it. You could play untouchable soccer and not be able to put the ball in the net. And then the other team gets a freak all over the top. You know, your defender doesn't quite get the touch on it and, you know, someone rounds a keeper and scores. Or a dodgy decision or, you know, anything can take the game away from you. So what I tend to do is set small targets. For example, it might be we'll count how many times you can put 8 passes together without losing it. How many times can you switch play wide player to wide player? How many times can you make the goalkeeper make a save? Or how many times can you make the keeper work? And we will focus as a coaching staff specifically on those targets. We will try to get the players focused on those targets, play to those targets. You know, the 8 passes usually end up with the ball getting into the final third.
Right.
The switches of play usually end up with you getting the ball into the final third because you're attacking the space on the field. And then the work in the goalkeeper usually leads to shots on goal, which, you know, can be converted into goals. And then at the end of the game, if we win the game, we don't talk about, yay, we won. We talk about, how do we do against our target? Target, we smashed all of our targets. And that's the primary reason for why we've won this game. If we lose the game, we say, let's have a look at our targets. We did brilliantly against our targets. We, you know, it just wasn't meant to be on the day. You know, we weren't maybe clinical enough in terms of are finishing. So that's something that we need to look at working on in the future. But then the flip side, if we win a game and we've performed really poorly against target, we know the players are going to be happy that they won, but we want to demand more. We want to demand that we play this style of,
right,
of ball. We want to make sure we're moving the ball. We're putting into practice what we've learned through the week in training. And then on the flip side, if you lose a game and you've done poorly against target, well, then we know, look, this is what we need to improve in game, you know? So that's my process for how I manage the kind of win losses and expectation like that.
Let me ask, how do your team's girls respond to the targets? Do they fixate on them or do they let it come naturally?
I think all youth players, when they get into games, they kind of fixate more on the game than they do the targets. I think the targets are always linked into the week of practice. And so if, for example, we've been talking all week in practice about back foot out the other way, back foot out the other way for switching play, for removing the ball from pressure, and the target in game is switching play, we're basically saying that game day is an extension of our training week. It's a third training session. So let's just go in there, do what we've been doing. And so they will fixate on what we've done in training, which will help in the achievement of process goals. They don't really tend to fixate on the goals themselves. I wish they would more, to be honest.
Okay.
It's a tool, it's a coaching tool, more so for me to be able to explain the way the game went. You know, halftime, we're doing really well with possession, but we're not switching play, which means that all of our possession is in areas where we are going to be overloaded. So we need to start looking at continuing the 8 passes, but can we get a switch of play in there where we can now attack space? So it's a way of explaining a tactical element of the game to the players in a way that they'll understand. But then it's also something that we can actually measure.
Right.
Because we keep a tally, or we keep a score of it. So I don't think they fixate on it, but it's definitely very helpful for us in explaining what's going on the field to the kids.
I think as a coaching tool, it's magnificent, right? Like at my age, looking at a game, I'm like, this is great. I giggle about like the girls, because if I gave them specific targets, like they would fixate 100% on it instead of like letting the game flow naturally.
Right.
I did try something like that back when they were like U11, U12 range. Giving them like, hey, let's have, 8 shots in the first half. And it didn't matter if it was on target or not. I mean, at U11, U12, just can you pull the trigger? Mm-hmm. Can you switch the field of play a couple times and provide 2 crosses, kind of thing? And it was like they were missing the easy opportunities, whether it was a pass or like the correct decision. They were so fixated on just like, oh yeah, I have to do this. And so like I tapered away from that approach. Now that they're a little bit older, might be.
But I mean, it's not necessarily something that has to work for everyone and each group.
Right.
You know, this is the great thing about coaching. You can apply different ideas to different groups based on the different kind of chemistries and characteristics of each group.
Right.
You know, one thing I would say is, first of all, as they're slightly older, they're starting to become a little bit more. So the brain, the adolescent brain or pre-adolescent brain, starts to improve in its decision making at around the age that your girls are now, kind of 13.
Right.
And so problem solving becomes something that they're much more skilled and masterful at. But then is also something that needs to be involved in training in a regular occurrence in training, to help them improve the decision making. This is where kind of tactics come in. You know, this is why they say tactics, especially in-depth tactical thinking, should come into the game around the U13 mark. So now having targets maybe that fit into a tactical game plan, and by fit into a tactical game plan, I'm not talking about your style of play and your playing philosophy. The tactical side of things is different. The tactical side of things, my interpretation of it is, this is where our opponent is weak. Can we look to exploit that weakness in order to gain an advantage in the game?
Yeah.
You know, so for example, if you know that the center backs of a team won't head the ball, then you can play that diagonal over that center back, knowing they're not going to head it. So that's the tactical tweak that you'll make in your game. And then you'll basically start to talk to your wide player about making that slashing run inside the fullback, behind the center back, the diagonal run in there, would drop it over. They're not going to head it. You'll be in on goal. Having kind of targets that can help, with the tactical game plan as a wider part of kind of like a philosophy might be able to help. But again, you know, you're going to know your group far better than anybody else knows your group. And you're, you know, it's entirely up to you. I think knowing your, in the sales world, they say know your customer.
Right.
You know, knowing who it is that you're working with, who it is that you're, you know, working for is a huge part of it. And, you know, these are all kind of ideas and tools and you know, things that you can pick and use, and different groups will, you know, different things will work well, and, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, just want to move on to these characteristics of championship teams. I've been reading a book, I can't remember what it's called and I haven't got it with me. And they basically go through seven characteristics of championship teams. And some of it, a lot of it, in fact, you've mentioned. So the first one is called the seven C's of championship winning teams. So the first one is called a common goal. And it seems like your group basically came together and said, this is what we want to achieve. Do you ever kind of sit down and have a meeting with your group? Because something I do with my groups at the beginning of every season is we go, what is your outcome goal? What is your ideal outcome for the season?
Yeah, I do. I don't do it often. I try to do it like maybe every 6 months, right? To see if we're all still on the same line. And I think it's important that, you know, everybody within the team, whether it's you're on the first team, second, third, or fourth, right? They all have this common direction. And I think it's important that they open up to each other about it, right? Like, hey, if you're going to be a part of this team and this team's culture, like, we want to do this. And you may find a player that may not want to be in that direction. And that certain environment's, you know, bad for that player. It could kill the love for him. So I think it's a good thing to do every few months.
Yeah, for sure. Do you ever set process goals? So the outcome goal will be we want to win State Cup. Do you ever kind of do a thing, well, in order to win State Cup, we need to win this many games. And so that means we'll need to score this many. We'll need to concede, make sure our conceding is below this and our goal scoring is above this. So statistically, we're winning more games. And then where the goals are going to come from, and do you ever kind of break it down like that and set goals like that?
I do not. You know, ideally, I just say, you know, like as the most basic fundamental, like, you know, don't give up goals. Can we score goals? Can we pull 3 points, right? My girls tend to overanalyze everything.
Right.
So it's very important that I avoid the little details like those, like, hey, we don't want to give up more than 3 goals in a season. We want to score 20 goals in a season. Like, they will stress if they're not reaching those marks.
Right.
So I think it's important for this group to just not, not focus on the little micro details.
When I was doing the high school coaching, we had a document that we made that basically the captains of the group would kind of speak to the group as a whole. So it was kind of coach directed, but player led.
Right.
And they would basically write down a list of kind of their expectancies of each other. So like what they wanted to achieve, certain behaviors that, you know, they were looking for, but then it also had kind of deal breakers. So it's, you know, not turning up to training to go and socialize with your mates was a deal breaker. And so they basically would talk about these things, write it all down, and then all of the players would sign it. And so then your teammates would hold you accountable and say to you, listen, you said that this behavior here was not acceptable. Blaming somebody else rather than, you know, standing up for the mistakes you've made or owning up to the mistakes you've made is not an acceptable trait for this team.
Right.
And so, you know, you've signed it. So, you know, it was a really good way of kind of getting everybody onto the same page. And so having that kind of common goal, especially something written down, tangible, something that, you know, you can measure and see, is definitely, I think, important. The second C is commitment. You've spoken, you know, about the work that your players have put into it in terms of private training, extra training, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a huge part of any kind of team. Whether you're successful or not, you know, it has to be a fundamental. You all have to be committed to putting in the work.
It is very important. And I think, like, you know, like, you take like the first team, their goals are a lot different than, you know, the fourth team, right? So they take a higher level of commitment. They know to play at the next level, like, they're going to have to do much more, mm-hmm. right? Because that next level is like competing regionally, nationally, you know? And, you know, we bumped into this team at regionals, Angelo, and they were lights out, like, mm-hmm. played some of the most beautiful soccer. And like, our girls were like, they had nothing but love for this team that they just got shelled by. And they know, like, they're like, it was eye opening to them. They're like, wow, we worked hard. And like, we need to step it up to get there, right? And like, but that's a first team mentality. And then you have, you know, players on the fourth team, their next goal is to get to the third team, right? And so their level of commitment doesn't need to be as intense or serious as a first teamer's, but they still need to commit extra. Mm-hmm. And we talk about doing things outside of our 2 days a week training to improve, to help you reach your goal. So,
yeah, for sure. The third C is something called complementary roles. And it's this idea of all of the cogs in a clock make the clock work, regardless of their size.
Yes.
You know, it could be that you've got somebody on the team who is the team captain, but they're equally as important as the player that's going to come off the bench in this game. And, you know, you'll need that person coming off the bench to maintain a level of performance. And so, you know, they become just as equal. I think it's a really, really important part of it. This whole idea of a starting 11, I mean, I don't know if you buy into it. I've seen players and coaches who basically say, this is my starting 11. And they will start every game. And all I see is the players on the bench slowly declining their interest, declining their motivation, because, like you said right at the beginning, trust. So I never pick a starting 11 more than once in a row, you know. Right. In fact, one of the things that we do in our group is, okay, who started the last game? Okay, that's the starting line for the last game. Who was on the bench? Okay, all of the bench players are going to start this game.
Right.
You know, and then we try to make sure the team isn't strongest 11 with, you know, 5-6 subs who aren't the strongest. We try to make sure it's mixed and blended as much as possible so we can have a much more consistent level of performance. So I think complementary roles, making sure everybody understands their role and that their role is as important as somebody else is a huge deal for sure. The fourth one is clear communication. How does that work for you?
As a person, I'm pretty direct. Like, and, you know, I've always said what's on my mind, and, you know, sometimes like the Jersey kid in me has.
I was going to say, is that the New Jersey / New York?
Yeah, you know, I have to take a step back sometimes because I'm pretty blunt, and, you know, I have to manage other people's feelings, like, because I could say it and it's not meant to be malicious in any means, but some people will be like, I can't believe you just said that, right? Yeah. If you ask my group of parents, they will tell you I email too much.
Right.
So I'm very attentive to details, and I'm getting information to the families, to the players, like, hey, whether it's this is what time we arrived, this is the kit we're wearing, you know, bring your slides so you can change into, like, I'm so specific, and probably a little too much. You know what I mean? I could simplify it.
Yeah.
I
I'm the exact opposite.
Really?
I don't like to communicate with my parents. I much rather do my stuff on the field.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful that I've got a great assistant who takes care of all of that stuff for me.
Yeah.
But you know, I've come through my coaching world where, you know, there's been too much influence.
Right.
From the sidelines, which can have very negative impacts on groups of players. And so I try to do my best to kind of drown them out and shut them off.
Right.
And just try to focus with the players. You know, when a parent needs to be spoken to about something, I'll do that by all means. But other than that, you know, I try to give the players a bit more of a sense of ownership in that. You know, if your parents want to know what we worked on in training, they should ask you.
Yeah.
You know, you talk to them. Yeah. If they want to understand the game, the tactics for the game, then they should talk to you as the player.
Right.
You should have an understanding where you can explain it. And if that's not good enough, then first of all, I haven't done my job, but then I'm also willing to accept that and explain it myself. So yeah.
Yeah, the communication, like it is important, but I also like at this point, like I'm 100% blessed with my group of parents. They're like completely hands off, mm-hmm. you know. And I mean, in the beginning, they used to respond to emails and be like, "Hey, this is great." Da, da, da. Now they're probably just over it. Yeah. But like they I probably burnt that bridge. But as far as I know, they have like complete trust with me to handle mm-hmm. the situation. And with the 08s, they're old enough now to where they're not afraid to articulate their feelings and thoughts. And, you know, going back to that trust, they know they can come and talk to me and be like, "Hey, can we do this in training? I feel like we're missing out on this." Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's this, you know? And so they ask questions. And so really the parents are there, like when we travel, like it's like organizing that fundraisers. And then the rest, they just kind of like, we do our thing, you know? It's really, really good for me. And I know your assistant very well. He's amazing.
Yeah, he really is.
He's amazing. He's amazing.
So the next C, which I think is the fifth C, is constructive conflict. And that basically describes letting players kind of have conflict, manage conflict, and then come out with a better understanding of each other and, you know, in turn pulling in the same direction.
See, this is something I have to say I'm lucky enough to not have to experience with this group. Like, I've had very, very minimal conflict within this entire age group. It's 74 girls mm-hmm. total, right? Now, one of my other assistants, Renee, has taken over our third and fourth team, like fully taken over. And I come in and I'll be at the games when I can. But even she has yet to come to me and tell me that there's been like an issue, really. You know, we have certain moments, you know, mm-hmm. And we always go back to that statement. You don't have to be best friends with everyone on the team, but you have to respect everyone on the team. And, you know, hats off to this group of girls, like 74 girls, and I've yet to have like major issues. You know, I'm sure there's stuff that I don't know about, but at least at training, at games, it's clear and free.
Yeah.
You know, they are teenagers now, right? Like there's school stuff happening, this and that. So I'm pretty lucky that I haven't had to be like, "Well, go sort it out," you know?
Yeah. It's, I mean, the social side of things is really important. Especially it's, you know, it's for me, it's one of the main pillars of youth development, is that kind of the socialization and how it ties into kind of emotional response. And so being able to kind of deal with conflict in a way that's not damaging. And, you know, the conflict doesn't have to be something where two players are ready to throw down, you know. It could literally be the smallest of things that they don't agree with. You know, for example, it's, "You keep playing the ball in behind for me to run onto. I don't want it there. I want it at my feet."
Right.
You know, and so being able to articulate that in a way where it's not like you're having a go at someone, and be able to kind of sit down, discuss that, work it out. You know, each side gets to have their say. And it might just be a case of, oh, well, I feel like you can take that player for speed, and she's getting really tight to you, so there's a ton of room to play the ball into. And it might just be, yeah, the problem is I'm having to pull off her to try to find space. And while right. I might be drawing her in, I'm not going at the time that you're playing the pass. So can we work that out? Can you maybe play that? Can you hold it a second longer and see if I start going? And when I go, can you play it? Or can you play it to my feet and then come to me and we'll do a quick triangle around the player and then I'm into the space? You know, yeah. Here we go. We solved the conflict and we're moving on.
There's some of that at like a very elementary level. You know, the girls will be like, hey, like in this situation, play me in a space. And then they kind of like the teammates like, okay, cool. And then they let it go. You know what I mean? Right. I think as they get a little bit older, there might be that higher level thinking and, you know, discussion about it. But right now it's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. They're finding their, you know, voices. They know that when they communicate with each other, it's not done in, you know, a malicious manner. Right. And I think that's the most important things. But you know, some of the players are, you know, still the quiet ones, right? Like they're not that. They're not going to tell a teammate, hey, I'm under pressure. You should have played my right foot there.
Right.
Like they'd be like, you know, the player who passed it was like, sorry. And they're like, okay. Yeah. Like, and then they come on with it. Right.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So the last two, cohesion, which you've already mentioned, you know, players have a great respect for each other. Yeah. I think liking each other is important, but it's not a deal breaker.
Right.
You know, as long as you have respect for each other, the cohesion will be there. I've always found in my experience, the people I've kind of called my friends, that I've hung out with, that I've, you know, spent time with away from the field, are the people that I'm going into game and I'm ready to die for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very ride or die. I'm there. I've got your back. You know, and so I do think it definitely helps with cohesion. The last one is credible coaching. Important one, huh?
Yeah, it's important.
Doesn't matter how good the group is, if the coach don't have a plan.
Yeah, if the coach can't coach absolutely. The cohesion is very important. Just to touch base on that a little bit, like I think it's important for the teams to do things as a team, to hang out with each other, maybe not as a full team, but to, you know, mix it up with people, hang out. And then team events are, I think, very important. Mm-hmm. And then credible coaching. You know, I've seen teams, and I'm not going to mention names at this point, but I've seen teams who have loads of talented players and coaches terrorizing those players. Mm-hmm. On the field, like belittling them. Yeah. And then you could even take it a step further, like, because I feel this is a coach issue, is that on the field, how the players talk to each other. Like I've had, you know, this past year, I've had our team come off and be like, I can't believe they talk to each other like that. Mm-hmm. And that comes from the coach.
Attitude reflects leadership.
Yeah. It comes from the coach. And then the parents on top of that, like I've heard this other coach who I respect and I think he's a really good coach and he's new to the team and he's trying to change this culture and stuff like that. But like parents literally on the same team arguing with each other, like that goal was your kid's fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like they're 13.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And so, it's tough because like, you know, this guy, in this example, he's new, he's trying to change it. But then you look at the coaches who have been with these talented teams, just terrorizing it. Yeah. Like, and I'm like, you're ruining, like this kid's not going to play in college.
Yeah.
He's going to stop playing in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Unfortunately, I agree.
Yeah.
See it all too often, you know, I think, as I said, attitude reflects leadership.
Right.
You know, I often have to talk to players about bullying and just basically try to create an environment where, first of all, you have to understand everybody's different. You know, everybody reacts differently to things. And so we have to be kind of cognizant of who it is that we're engaging with at any time. You know, if there's anybody having difficulties, you want to be the teammate that they can come and talk to, not the teammate that they don't want to talk to because they're worried that you will use that against them, you know, at a time when there is some kind of friction or there is some kind of constructive conflict going on or needed, let's say. And the way you talk to each other will be kind of mimicked in terms of how a coach talks to a player or how even a coach talks to another, to you know, another one of their coaches, their assistant coach, or, you know, those kind of relationships. So we're always being watched. We're always, we always have to set the example. And I think that's a huge part of what credible coaching is. You know, it's knowing what needs to happen on the field, being confident, being able to explain and having a plan.
Yes.
Because the last thing you want is to be questioned. And I've seen this before where a player's questioned the coach, you know, on a tactical piece or a tactical cue. And the coach just hasn't been able to answer the question and has, instead of saying, you know, that's a great question, I'm not quite sure, let me look at it, they've basically just berated a player. Stop asking questions. And, you know, that's definitely not credible coaching for sure. But then being able to kind of take each player as an individual and then also take each player as part of a unit and then take each player and put them into a full unit, you know, is huge. I have to agree.
Absolutely. I think it's also important, especially with like younger youth players, that when, and like, I mean, I've made a laundry list of mistakes, right? And I open up to the team about it. Like, I don't want them to think I'm on this pedestal, that I'm not human. Like, I made a mistake, you know, the other week. Like, I was getting, like, you know, badgered, and I was trying to talk, and like, I kind of lost my cool because there were side conversations going on. And like, I let it go for the night, and then, you know, like, but the next day I apologized and I sat them down and I was like, that was not cool on my part. Right. Mm-hmm. I had a very human moment with them. And I think it's important. Like so many coaches, their ego gets in the way and they lose it. And then they don't talk about it. They don't address their mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes with credible coaching. It's like, as a coach, you're going to make mistakes too.
Yeah.
Tons of them.
For sure.
You make a wrong sub, you do a wrong formation, you know, you have a training session that is, you think it's good in your head, and then when you put it out in the field, it's a disaster.
It doesn't work.
Right? Like, yeah. Like, I mean, I've done that too, where it's like, oh, I saw this different in my head, girls. I'm sorry. We need to do something different. Like, it's not working, you know, or like you have an emotional moment and you need to address it and just be like, this is my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to, all the way back to that trust.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
It's a great way to kind of circle right away back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And there. So, thank you so much for your time. Well, I am A9 Soccer on Twitter and on Instagram. Come find me, come talk. If you've got any messages that you want to get across to Johnny here, by all means, you can leave them with me and I can pass them on. With that, we'll say thank you so much, Johnny, for joining. And have a good night.
You too. Thank you very much, Angela. I had a blast. I appreciate it.
No problem.